And I'm grateful for the invitation that PJ extended me some time back, and I'm grateful to be here today. Overeaters Anonymous has been nothing short of a life-saving, life-redeeming program for me. At 420 pounds, dying of type 2 diabetes after putting on 150 pounds after a triple bypass, with 11 years and another 12-step fellowship telling you that I was living a spiritual life, I was dying. I was in the middle of another 12-step fellowship, suffering from the symptoms of this illness with a well-honed recovery ego, which means that I'd memorized passages out of the big book and was not living a program. I didn't have a prayer and meditation life. I did all the things that looked good and kept you away from me. Because if you asked me how I was doing, I'd tell you I was doing fine. And the last thing that I was fine. I grew up in an alcoholic home, where I was witness to and victim of things that no child should be witness to or victim of, and I turned to food for comfort early on. But that's not why I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a compulsive overeater because, as it states in the doctor's opinion, I have an allergy to certain ingredients in food. And until I got clear on that, I couldn't get abstinent. And for me, abstinence is black and white. My black and white abstinence date in Overeaters Anonymous is August 26th of 2020. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous since 2015. I've released 220 pounds, fully resolved type 2 diabetes, fully resolved sleep apnea, and I've healed feet that had to have four toes amputated, two off of each foot. The first two on each foot are missing. And I'm now able to hike in the mountains on a regular basis. You're going to have a hard time telling me that this program doesn't work. But I had to get clear on a few things first. And the first thing I had to get clear on was my utter and complete powerlessness in the face of food, which is why I have a nutritionist who I consult with every 2 weeks. It's why I weigh and measure every meal I have. It's why I report everything that goes into my mouth on a daily basis to a sponsor. It's why I read her an assignment each day written out of the big book or other 12-step literature. It's why I weigh and measure everything, even when I'm on the road or in a restaurant. I don't have the ability to manage what I'm going to eat. And on page 86 of the big book, I think, or somewhere in the big book, it says, after all, a man's brain needs to be cleared before spiritual things, right? And while we like to use the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous, which, by the way, is very effective on alcoholism, I know because, in 2003, I had to get sober as well. It was very effective in keeping the drink out of my hand, but I wasn't fully implementing the continued actions. In our 10th step, it says continue to take personal inventory. Well, I was a lot better at taking yours. And I would occasionally take mine when things got more difficult. So I'm a guy that nearly ate and drank himself to death at 44 years old, and then proceeded to eat like a madman while a member of another 12-step fellowship and nearly kill himself at 55 again. Right? I've got heart disease. I've got type 2 diabetes, full remission. There's a line in the big book somewhere where it says, some of us had to be pretty badly mangled. And one of the things that I like to talk about is when we do these things and is it possible you're in more trouble than you think you are? Right? Because the first 43 pages of the book that we hold in such high esteem is about one singular idea. Step one. Are you delusional? And is it possible that with years in the fellowship, you can exist in that state in an area of your life that might be killing you slowly? Because that was the case for me. I always thought I could get a grip on it if I needed to. I was always a heavy kid. I always overate during, I just overate every opportunity I got until I discovered beverage alcohol at 13. I had the allergy. I was an off the cliff drunk. I was out of my house living on my own by the time I was 15 because it wasn't safe for me to live at home. I would work, I would eat and drink. And I did that basically on a daily basis until the drinking nearly killed me. I was having heart attacks during DTs and walking out of intensive care wards, cardiac intensive care wards, and into liquor stores at 44 years old. And I did that more than once. So I'm not a guy who's got a lot of options when it comes to recovery. I either have to work at all or die. And for me, it's that simple. I don't get to work the edges. I don't get to have the occasional comfort. I have to embrace the spiritual discomfort of the 12 steps on a regular basis in order to live with peace and serenity. And the interesting thing that I found is that when I do that, I do live with peace and serenity, which are much more permanent than comfort, because what seeking comfort did was nearly kill me about five different ways, right? And by the way, I'm the kind of guy that likes to treat one obsessive compulsion with another, right? I'm happy to I'm happy to treat my spiritual malady. See, I get sober in AA in 2003, and I'm happy to treat my spiritual malady with food. Even though I don't know I'm doing it, I think I'm just taking my occasional comfort, as I think it talks about somewhere in the 12 and 12, right? That gluttony is we there's some remarks in the 12 and 12, the AA 12 and 12 about those things. And so for me, the thing that I really had to begin to focus on when I came to OA after I got my food in a cup was, okay, how am I going to practice these principles in all of my affairs? And that's kind of the topic that I'm talking about. And by God, the people in my life that are close to me will report to you that I'm not perfect in that area, but they will also report to you that I'm a lot better than I used to be at it. That I apply the principles of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to go to any length in just about every area of my life. And the result of that is that I've got a life that 10 years ago, nobody could have predicted I would have at 65 years old. Anybody that saw me was preparing for my imminent demise. I was nearly drinking myself to death at 44 years old, and I was fortunate enough to detox and to get sober. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the first 5 years, I did pretty good work in that fellowship. I did the work. I had a sponsor. I began to sponsor other men. But around 5 years sober, some things began, some events happened in my life. I had to have that triple bypass because of the damage that I'd done to my heart. So I had a cardiac bypass at 49 years old. And I remember clearly waking up in the recovery room from that surgery thinking, well, I can pretty much eat whatever I want. No, I've got kind of a free bill of health here. They fixed me. Right? Now they had to crack my chest and repair the damage I'd done to myself at 44 years old, but that's the level of delusion that I live in, right? There's another line in the book that talks about being an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. That's me. I will be living in absolute delusional insanity and completely unaware of it. And by the way, if you try to open my eyes to it, we're gonna have a pretty serious argument because I have one speed in my life. I'm offended, right? I have one feeling. I'm offended. You don't get to talk to me about the things that you might see, right? Now, I believe that we should all do that with spiritual consent. I don't do that with anybody that I don't have spiritual consent with, which means that you and I have had a conversation that if I see you going sideways, you'll say something, and if you see me going sideways, you'll say something. And we'll do it with love and compassion and understanding, but we will be authentic enough to tell each other the truth about the nature of what we see, right? And I have people like that in my life, members of Overeaters Anonymous, members of my other fellowship, and members of my family who aren't in recovery, don't need to be, who oftentimes can see things that none of us can see, right? I think it's easy sometimes to come into these rooms and we're welcomed and we're so good to each other and we're so supportive that we surround ourselves with people in recovery and we don't get the view of outside people. Right. I've had to have that. And I had to have that to treat the trauma that I experienced that was holding me back from many areas of my life. I had a close friend who is a clinician who pulled me aside one day and said, "Patrick, this is going to eat your lunch if you don't do something about it." Now, I'd been abstinent for a considerable period of time. I'd been sober for a considerable period of time. But she could see some things in my life that I couldn't see that were holding me back. And so I began the book talks about medicine and clergy are our friends, right? So my pathway to beginning to practice these principles in all my affairs really started in a way because I had to live a very disciplined life around food. And I began to understand and realize that if I applied these actions, the tools of OA, for lack of a better way to describe them, they're in our brown book, in our OA brown book. When I began to apply those tools to every area of my life and live with what people would say, "Oh, that's too rigid, that's too disciplined." Well, see, my other high level skill is to give you an opinion about something I won't try. I have oodles of contempt prior to investigation present in my life. So I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot with contempt prior to investigation. That sounds like a recipe for a healthy life, doesn't it? I mean, that sounds like a pathway to freedom, right? I'm like a guy in jail with the key to the cell in my pocket, and I won't reach out around the door and do the lock. Right? And then I'll complain about being in prison. Freedom from the bondage of self. That's what our third step talks about. It doesn't say freedom from the bondage of what they did to me or what you did to me. It says freedom from the bondage of self. Right? Well, that's a little much, don't you think? Well, what's food asking you to do? What's it asked you to do? It's asked me to lose body parts. I had to have seven surgeries on my feet while I was in Overeaters Anonymous and abstinence, right? It was asking me to live with type 2 diabetes, even though it's in full remission now, with heart disease. It was asking me to put on 150 pounds after they saved my life with a triple bypass. That's what food was asking me to do. And then you asked me to live with some spiritual discipline in my life and some commitment to a food plan and some high level accountability around that food plan. On a daily basis, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like I've got a choice. I love to live under the delusion that I have a choice around this, and I don't. It's either do what I do or die. And by the way, die a miserable death, and other people,
5 minutes left.
thank you, and other people have to watch that process. So my entry into this fellowship was I got sober. I was a sober for 11 years. I was at the International AA Convention in Atlanta, Georgia in 2015, and a responsible recovered member of this fellowship 12-stepped me. She had seen me running around AA, running my mouth about what a spiritual life that I was living, because I was doing seminars. And I'm the kind of guy that can memorize the front end of the big book and sound real good and not do shit the other 23 hours a day. I can go to a meeting and sound excellent for the first hour, for that hour, and then not do any of it for the next 23, not live with these principles in my life. Basically, I live in duality. I tell you I'm living in recovery and I'm doing anything but because I'm delusional. I'm suffering the symptoms of my disease. And I can't break free of that until I have somebody that has the courage to put their finger in the wound. And that's what she did. She said I was, now mind you, I'm 420 pounds. My legs are numb from the knees down from the chronic neuropathy that the type 2 has created, which is a permanent condition. My legs are still in that shape. But I run around, I hike mountains all the time. I've been mountain hiking 5 times in the last, I don't know, 18 months. New Mexico, Colorado, all over the place in the United States here. And so, I'm free. My feet are in good shape because I have an excellent orthopedic surgeon and I've done what I needed to do to take, I've learned how to take care of myself because you guys taught me. She sat down next to me and she said, "Patrick, how you doing?" And I said, "I'm fine." Because that's my standard answer. Now, Stevie Wonder could see that I wasn't fine, right? But, I'm going to tell you I am. And she looked me right in the eye and she said, "Patrick, you're full of shit. You're dying. And you're and as a recovered member of Overeaters Anonymous, you don't have to. I'm here to tell you that you don't have to." And I'd always assume she was a member of AA because I always saw her and her husband at these events. Well, she would come to his AA events and he occasionally would accompany to her to an OA event because they're right. And she 12-stepped me right then and there. Now I'd love to tell you I came home and immediately surrendered. That wasn't the case. I ate like an idiot for like a madman for a month. But it quit working. And one Sunday morning, I woke up with a mustard seed of willingness, and I went online and I found the OA meeting that was in a church that was less than a mile from my house. So I'm a kind of guy that's got to travel co cross country to get the information I need to find recovery less than a mile from my house. And I walked into that meeting, and another responsible recovered member of this fellowship approached me after the meeting and said, "Hey man, what are you going to have for breakfast?" Which I thought was a rather rude, intrusive question. And I ended up answering, "Well, I don't know." And he said, "I'll tell you what, I have a food plan. If you want to follow that until we can get you to your own, let's do that." So I started. And I had 5 years of good abstinence. I relapsed in the hospital when they were considering amputating my right foot. I got an episode of self-will run riot. I'm about to experience severe consequences of my disease. And my response to that is not to pray or to make phone calls, but to binge eat a can of walnuts in the hospital. Is it possible I'm in more trouble than I think I am? Yeah, for me it is. I experienced my first step again, about to experience the severest consequences of my illness that I could have possibly And they didn't have to amputate my foot. They ended up just amputating the first two toes on that foot that day. Now, maybe many of you on this call stories aren't as extreme as mine. My experience is this thing wants me dead, it'll settle for me in the cookies, and it'll do anything to get me there.
Your time.
Yep, thank you. So I guess if we're going to have a topic, let's talk about how we try to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope with you here today because I really do have a wonderful life today as a result of Overeaters Anonymous. I'll pass.